This is a Sports Radio 740 podcast on SportsRadio740.com.
All righty, welcome back, everybody. Tom Lugenbill brought to you by our good friends at River Bank and Trust. Go by and see our friends with convenient locations throughout Central and South Alabama. Luke, good to talk to you again. It's been a couple of weeks, but we've finally gotten through what was traditionally the big signing day in college football, the first Wednesday in February. And I guess, you know, your overall thoughts about how it played out this year, particularly since we had the early period in December.
Well, I think there was still plenty of drama. You know, you came into the day, the player pool is at around 800 players. About half of those were verbally committed going into the day. You have a team like the University of Georgia that ends up flipping six prospects from other programs. So just further evidence that just because you're verbally committed doesn't mean that's where you're going to sign. I felt like the day had plenty of drama. The Pac-12 probably made the biggest stride from the, you know, first signing period to this past Wednesday. And then, you know, with the guys that were left on the board, the high-profile players, the Patrick Surtain Juniors, the Tyson Campbells, Jacob Copeland, you know, those were the high-profile guys, Nick Petit-Freer, the offensive tackle. Those guys made splashes with where they ended up signing. Georgia ends up stealing another corner in Campbell, and Alabama gets who they want in their corner in Patrick Surtain. And Ohio State, once again, goes out of their footprint and gets what was still the best on for other programs. They had to fill out, you know, 10, 12, 13 slots.
It's interesting to look at it now that it's now that the national signing period is absolutely totally over. Now the next thing we look forward to is spring practice. I note that ESPN.com already has a blog post about seven teams the hype machine will be pushing until September, and it mentions Miami and Michigan State, Wisconsin, Texas, Washington, Florida Atlantic, and Auburn. I wanted to ask you about your perceptions about this, because already it seems as though the love affair between the University of Nebraska and Scott Frost is one of the, on Valentine's Day, one of the tenderest, most heartfelt love affairs in college football right now. Does that have the look of a lasting thing to you, Tom?
I think time will tell. It's a little early right now for me to put my stamp on Nebraska, because I think that that whole landscape has changed so dramatically in terms of what college football has become over the last 20 years. And a lot of these changes have not helped Nebraska football. What I mean by that is, you know, the advent of cable television where everybody's playing on TV, the bowl structure where everybody goes to a bowl, limited scholarships, no longer unlimited walk-ons, which is what Nebraska had built their program on for years and years and years. So I think it's too early to tell if Scott Frost can get this program above and beyond where Bo Pelini got it. Because right, wrong, or indifferent, whether you enjoyed Bo Pelini's tenure at Nebraska or not, he averaged 9 wins a season in an era where that's probably the best you're going to do at Nebraska. So now Scott Frost is tasked with bettering that, getting above and beyond that, getting to the 10 and 11 win mark and competing with for Pac-10 championships. I don't know if that can be done on a consistent basis in today's world. I know they feel so excited because they've got one of their own at home. They're bringing an exciting offense to Lincoln, but I still think they're a couple recruiting classes away from having the type of player, particularly on offense, to be able to have the type of explosive offense that we saw from Scott Frost while he was at Oregon, and certainly most recently at Central Florida.
You know, Tom, of all of the historical successful college football programs, and for our younger audience, they might not be aware of this, but Nebraska was a juggernaut back in the day when Tom Osborne was the coach, and they were winning national championships regularly. But in this day and age, as you just laid out, in my opinion, Tom, Nebraska might be the hardest place to really get back to where they want to be. I mean, they're in the middle of the country. There's not a lot around them. I mean, you know, wow, let's go to Lincoln, Nebraska, where the weather can be, you know, pretty pretty crummy. And I'm not real sure what their high school football is like out there. But to me, Tom, that would be one of the more difficult rebuilding jobs to get them back to where they really want to be.
Well, I can tell you this. I'll give you some staggering numbers here. In the 2014 recruiting class, we went back and we did a study of the average miles away from campus of every player that signed with the University of Nebraska in that class. And when I tell you this number, you're going to say, what?
Okay.
Over 900 miles away from Lincoln, Nebraska was the average miles away from campus of every player that they signed. That is a huge challenge. There's no way you can blanket the country like that and bring the best players into Lincoln year in and year out. You don't have the quality of player within your state. You don't have states that border you that have quality football. And if you go back 30 years, 25 years, or even further, and you mentioned it being a blue blood program, a staple of college football. Well, prior to cable television, there was a handful of teams that played on national television every year. Nebraska was one of them. And every week, you know, that N on the helmet, and Coach Devaney and then Coach Osborne, that meant something from a national perspective. You had 105 scholarships instead of 85 scholarships. You had unlimited walk-ons, all right? And you had some things to recruit to. Now the playing field has been leveled out, and it creates some huge challenges. I've been saying for the last 5 to 7 years, that regardless of Nebraska's history, guys, it is one of the most difficult jobs in all of college football because of today's college football climate.
That is very interesting. Tom Luginbill from ESPN. Around here, Tom, talking about traditional programs and nudging into recruiting, I doubt that we could pull a fire alarm around here and have a more panicky reaction from people than some people are about Alabama finishing, God forbid, sixth or seventh in the recruiting rankings. What is wrong with Alabama? What's the story there? What can you tell us?
There is no story. Go in and look at their class. Look at the players that they signed. Look at where they rank amongst their respective position and what position they are at. They loaded up with pass rushers. They loaded up in the offensive line. They loaded up at corner. Okay, this is a class that fulfilled such needs with limited numbers, and because they didn't get Jacob Copeland or because they didn't get Nick Petit-Frere, doesn't mean that what they accomplished wasn't not anything short of sensational. We become so conditioned with following recruiting and following Alabama's presence in recruiting that if they're not number one, all of a sudden the sky is falling. All you've got to be to have a chance to compete for a national championship is a perennial top 10 recruiter year in and year out. If you take the four teams that played in the college football playoff this year and you look at their four-year recruiting ranking composite combined of those four teams over the last 4 years, they all ranked on average within the top 10. You don't have to be one. You don't have to be two. You don't have to be five. And so I think what we've got to understand is have some perspective. Sooner or later, this whole thing is going to come to an end. And God forbid for any Alabama fan finds themselves 5 years, 10 years, 12 years from now, clamoring to be the sixth-ranked recruiting class in all of America. So,
Luke,
have some perspective.
Luke, do you buy into what some Alabama fans are thinking, that the reason there were so many changes on Nick Saban's staff was because of recruiting?
In what sense? That he was too hard on the coaches, or that recruiting?
Well, felt like maybe he needed some better recruiters on his staff.
Oh, well, now listen, that if you're looking at it from Nick Saban's perspective, that could very well be the case. I don't know if there's any concrete evidence for that. But I do know this. There is a premium place on that first and coaching second at that place. Yeah, you want to have good football coaches? It ain't about coaching football. It's about having the Jimmys and the Joes, not the X's and the O's. And so he is going to target high-end recruiters and grinders in that area. And if he felt like he wasn't getting the production from certain members of the staff, then you're darn right he's going to make some shifts and some changes in that regard. That doesn't surprise me in any way, shape, or form. In my opinion, every single perennial program year in and year out that is competing for conference championships or a college football playoff berth, all of their coaches are probably better recruiters than they are X's and O guys.
That's interesting. Tom, I wanted to ask you about this. We referenced an article this morning at CBS Sports that released or that referenced recently released NCAA figures that said college football, major college football, experienced its largest per-game attendance drop in 34 years. The average attendance last year is the lowest mark since 1997. It seems like an established fact that college football attendance is losing its popularity. What we're interested in are the possible factors why. Do you have any guesses?
I think it's so many different ways and availability to stream content. You know, it used to be you either attended the game or you watched it on your TV at home or you watched it in a bar or restaurant, all right? Now,
yeah.
If somebody gets into a jam, they get into a bind, you know what? They can watch it. They can watch it on their phone. They can watch it in the middle of the desert. They can watch it on an iPad. They could stream it anywhere. They could be on a boat somewhere and stream it. So maybe what people have chosen to do, and I don't think there's much concrete evidence for this, but you're asking my opinion. Us at ESPN, we deal with this right now. There's so many different mediums to stream content and consume sports that ESPN's had to make a lot of adjustments. We've had to make changes. We've had to upgrade our technology and fall better in line with the consumer and the viewer. And I think that if you can't be at the game, people aren't losing their minds as much about it as they used to because they feel like they're never out of touch with being able to view the sport.
But the bigger schools, are they really even concerned about it now? Because isn't it mostly about ticket sales? I mean, if they're still selling their season ticket packages and people are fearful of losing their seats if they don't renew and re-up, whether they go or not, I guess we'd love the concession sales, but hey, you know, the big boys out here still are selling ticket packages.
Yeah, I wouldn't put too much stock into this being considered a trend or looked at as a danger.
Right.
It could be an economical dip. It could be something where the group of five schools are the ones that are creating the dip in the average attendance. Because I've broadcasted a lot of games throughout the Sun Belt, throughout the MAC. I've been in those stadiums, and you know, there's times where you're not going to get 2,000 or 3,000 people in the stadium, depending upon who the opponent is or when the game's being played. So this may be more reflective of the 130 teams as opposed to just strict Power Five programs.
As we let you go here, Tom, one thought from you. Spring practice unfolds. Some places it's beginning or has already begun. Spring practice is unfolding. Any spring practice out there in Division I-A that you are that you can counsel our fans to especially be interested in? Some really insightful places where spring is going to tell a lot about their program?
Alabama, Clemson, and Georgia all at the quarterback position.
Fair enough.
All three of those teams, and I would actually say USC as well, because they're going to have a reclassified true freshman in JT Daniels competing with two unknowns in Matt Fink and Jack Sears. So I think you've got some blue blood programs out there that are going to have some fantastic quarterback storylines heading into spring and into the summer.
Well, we certainly look forward to getting your analysis and updates on it as spring rolls around. But, Tom, as we wrap up today, we just want to thank you once again another great year here with us on Sports Radio 740. It has been fantastic, and we certainly hope to be able to do it again next season when things roll around and kick off in August.
Yeah, well, so do I, guys. I always enjoy it each and every week. Hit me up in the spring. We'll catch up a little bit, and you guys have yourself a good rest of the month.
Tom Luginbill.